This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me
Neil Haggerty.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Neil, you've been involved for some time in a bird census, a bird atlas?
Or? Yeah, essentially, just to give it a bit of context, it's the New Zealand Bird Atlas, and it's probably the largest citizen science project ever undertaken in New Zealand. And the ultimate aim is to, over a five-year period, determine the distribution and the abundance of every bird species that's been seen in New Zealand within that five-year period.
Okay, now but you've got a book of the Atlas there, so it's really done every 5 years?
The last one was done 20 years ago, and there's been another one previous to that. So this is the third one. Okay. But this one's probably going to be by far the most accurate, mainly because it's been done on a purely digital platform, making it much more accessible for people to participate, and also allows you to do computer modelling of the data. And essentially, what you produce are heat maps of every bird that it's been seen in New Zealand. Heat maps. They're just maps to show you the location and the abundance of each species.
So heat is just sort of concentration, really.
Yeah.
Different colours for highly concentrated. So have you been involved in this for a long time? Or?
Yes, I've been involved pretty much since its start. It's ending this May.
So this cycle?
This five-year cycle.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So it's a five-year project, so it will end this May. And then, as I've got here, people can't see it, obviously, but this is the book that was produced before. It was quite a large tome, about 530 pages. So you produce some very detailed data, because they don't just do the counts. They do the counts seasonally, so you see seasonal distribution. And they also try to do daytime and nighttime counts.
Okay. So what does your involvement...
Well, I guess to explain how it works is that New Zealand and the map has been broken up into multiple equal sized squares, and this is known as the grid, and this produces an atlas effort map. So all the data that goes in can be seen on this map, and you can follow in real time where everybody is being
observation effort is put down to a grid square.
Yes.
And how small are these?
Would
Palmerston North be one square? Or?
Yes, that would be within one square. Yes.
Okay.
They're reasonably large, but it's the data. As I say, it's run digitally, and it's been done with Birds New Zealand in collaboration with the Cornell Ornithology Laboratory in the US.
Okay.
And they have a website called eBird, which is by far the largest resource for bird observation and for bird knowledge. It has every bird species known on the planet there with a description, photographs, and in many cases the sounds that the birds make. But in terms of me being part of the Atlas project, it starts with the eBird app, which you can download on your phone.
Okay.
And when you download this app, this is where you log in the birds that you see. So when you open the app, you load in what they call a pack, which is for New Zealand. So that pack is then for New Zealand. So when you say, I want to start a checklist, the GPS will find your location in New Zealand, and it will put up a list of all the birds and probable birds and birds that have been seen in that location.
Okay.
And that you can then enter your observation.
So you've got to be able to identify the exact species of
bird. You need to be able to identify, obviously, for the quality of data for this survey, the more information you can enter about your observation, the better.
Yeah.
I mean, the app itself will be telling you the time, the location.
Yeah.
And if you're moving, it will tell you the distance you've traveled while you were doing these observations. Okay. And it, obviously, if you can put in if you're seeing a male or female bird.
So you have to be able to identify the male and female of all the species that you're looking at. It's not just I've taken a photo and here's a bird.
Ideally, if you're just looking in your garden, you see a blackbird.
Yeah.
You probably don't say male, female. You just blackbird.
Yeah.
But if you see, say, a blackbird and it's got a young bird that's feeding, you can enter that blackbird, two blackbirds, one adult, one juvenile feeding, and other details that you may pick up. You don't have to have all that data. Just any data is useful.
Okay.
If all you do is say, I saw two blackbirds, three sparrows.
Yeah,
that's perfectly fine. That's still useful data. But the more you can add to it, the better. Obviously, that comes with knowledge.
Yeah. So it's all visual observation, or what hearing, about this bird song?
If you hear, if you can identify birds by their song, you can enter those.
Does the app do something? I know there's some apps you can record bird song and it'll identify the bird. So are you uploading audio?
There's another app which is recommended because it's produced by the same digital platform. So these apps can integrate, called Merlin. And that's a very useful, that allows you to record bird song and it will identify the bird if it's got the ID present. I've found that for New Zealand, there's some birds that it doesn't identify. But what you can do is you can let the app know, say, well, I didn't find a match.
Yeah.
And that data will go back.
They've still got the audio.
The audio will go back. And this enables whoever's running the platform to then start expanding their knowledge about bird
sizing. I've known audio from this area.
Yeah. And then eventually, I've seen them, you know, I've done one where I've entered the bird and it said, no match. And I've sent the data off, and about 2 weeks later, when I've done the same bird, Bomb it gives me, it's already...
It's got the match.
Got identified the bird and give you the match.
Okay. But then birds somehow have different song in different regions and so on, don't they? So it can still identify despite the differences?
Well, again, you can enter, with Merlin, you can enter, we can really narrow down to just the birds that you're most likely to see in your area. So it'll just search.
So say this sounds like, what is it? Tui has bird. And Tui mimic other birds, don't they?
Yes.
So is that a problem?
It can be, yes. Particularly, and you'll see in the eBird, although we like to identify the exact species, quite often the bird that the two mimic the most is a bellbird. And there's actually, in the New Zealand list, there's actually an entry for Tui stroke bellbird if you're not certain.
Oh, okay.
If you're not certain whether you got the Tui or whether it's a Tui mimicking the bellbird. Yeah. And you can enter, say you're doing observations, say quite often when, say you get a big westerly wind blow, some of the ocean birds get blown in towards land.
Yeah.
And you might go down there and you might see a little bird fluttering and you go, oh, that's some sort of tern. But you can't see enough to say exactly what it is. You can then enter in the list tern species. So you've seen a tern species. So all of this data is useful. Any observation is useful.
So how much time do you spend on this?
Well, I personally, now I'm retired, I'm a keen birder, so but if I go take the dog for a walk, I'll start a count, just do a count while I'm walking.
A count
of the birds.
So it's like, what, how many different types, or how many...
Yeah, I mean, you start up the app on your phone, and it's, you just enter your bird and say, I saw, and then you seen a sparrow, four of them, a bit later on you see another three, so now I've seen seven.
Yeah, okay.
And so you end up with a list of birds and a number of those birds you've seen. Mm. What the app will then do is get you to, although it's got the GPS location, there's actually, they like to give descriptors, not just the GPS coordinates, they like to give sort of, I was at Hamati Park. So they'll give you a list of recommended names of areas around there, and you pick the one that's appropriate. Say, oh, I'd be at Hamati Park. And what the list will do, it'll show you, it has the birds that are commonly seen. The birds that are less commonly seen, it will give a little yellow disc beside it.
Yeah.
Okay. And they like to give a bit more information if you can. And then if you get one that's a red, red disc beside it, this means that this bird has not been recorded in that location before.
Oh, okay.
And
so you put it in and then the disc shows up?
It shows in the list. It shows you beside the list.
Oh, the possible birds, and then these, but these haven't been seen. I mean,
well, you enter your bird.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So I'll say I saw a dodo.
Yeah, but you don't from the list, or you...
Well, you can enter any bird.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
The list that's there is the recommended... That's the list of birds that have been seen and recorded in that location.
Yeah, okay.
And in the past. And some of the data for New Zealand, they've gone and put in historical data, say for somewhere where people do a lot of observations, like at the Foxing Estuary. They got records going back to 1933, so you'll see a rare bird last seen 1933 and hasn't been seen since.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think you've seen that bird, you enter it. It will boom. The red thing will be beside it saying, "Oh," and observations like that need a lot more corroboration to be accepted as. Unaccepted.
Okay, so you put an entry in. It's then there are moderators or reviewers. Or?
Yes, there are reviewers in New Zealand. There are reviewers in New Zealand who bird at the people who are mainly behind running the bird atlas, but also people who are behind observations of birds in New Zealand, whether it's for the atlas or not.
Hmm.
And if they will pick up, it will alert them that here's a red dot bird being seen, and they will look at that, and they will then ask for, and you'll get an email. I got one recently, and I'd seen a bird. It was raining. I couldn't get a photograph. Oh. I'd seen it. Nobody else had.
Yeah.
So they say, well, you know, we can't. That is an unconfirmed sighting.
Yeah.
Okay. So I thought, fair enough. I said, well, in that case, we won't put it. It won't be put forward.
Yeah,
as an actual observation in terms of doing the atlas.
Yeah,
but recently, and that was 2 weeks ago. This week, I went down. I managed to find the same bird, took a definitive photograph.
Yeah,
and then uploaded this, and that got experts saying yes, that is that bird.
Okay,
so that'll be accepted on the list, but they like you to put in an unusual bird record. So this is the more traditional.
Yeah,
method of recording, especially rare and unusual.
So
birds.
Basically, you know, the photographic evidence. They like
it's photographic evidence is obviously
that's the best. Yeah.
It's the best, and if
well, you can't really get other also, evidence, can you? I mean, the
well, you can get if you get several different birders going to the same location reporting and describing the same bird.
Yeah,
it can be accepted on that basis.
Now, do you find then that birds tend to stay in the same location? You know, you saw one somewhere. Do they have a wide area over which, I know some migrate and so on, but do they tend to move around a lot? Or
like birds move around, yes. It's part of the atlasing. It's kind of using common sense. And if you do generally, say if you're doing a walk into a bit of bush and you're going to come back the same route you went in,
yeah,
you do two different canks. You do a cank going in,
yeah,
and then you do a cank coming back, rather than doing one cank for the whole, because that reduces the likelihood of double counting.
I mean, you can't
eliminate that precisely, but then again, you could equally say that if I go into a walk around the park and count 15 sparrows, does that mean that's all there were there? No, that's probably reality a lot more. And that's why it's important you get so many counts as possible, because the more people who go, I may go into that area and see 15, some of you may go in and there might be a big flock of birds and they'll see 45. So it's that's why you want as many counts as possible to build up the statistical robustness of what you're seeing.
But they
like to, there's some the eBird app itself is a huge international database.
Yeah.
And as I say, it was created by the Cornell University, and I have some statistics. So there's over 10,800 species have been seen worldwide.
Yeah.
90 million checklists have been submitted into this database.
And each one is just from so if you had a trip in and a trip out, that's two checklists.
It depends. Yes, it's just a.
Yeah.
This is the international one, so this is not the bird. The NZ Bird Atlas asks you to do a little bit more, just to because of what they're trying to create. But there's over a million people have used this eBird site, and they're saying, I think there's something like 1.6 billion total birds have been. The same bird are recorded multiple times, obviously. It's an astounding website to go and look at.
Yeah.
And if you want to know anything about birds, and it has free seminars on various subjects. And
then what's the website again?
It's just called eBird.
Okay.
Yeah. Run by the Cornell Ornithology Lab out of the US.
Yeah.
And so the New Zealand Bird Atlas is piggybacked off that, so it extracts the New Zealand data.
Okay.
Uses that for New Zealand Bird Atlas. But the people who... And so you will have people who are atlases, who are really involved in the project, but you'll also have other people travelling throughout New Zealand who will be entering data.
Yeah.
You aren't necessarily doing it.
Have you any ideas? You're doing Palmerston North area and Foxton.
You do wherever you travel.
Yeah. But would there be many people doing this area then?
In around the Manawatu, I don't know what the total number would be. There are some very keen people who do the bees. Yeah. There's one guy I know who probably does 10 or 12 lists a day. I might do one or two. Some days I might not do any.
Yeah.
But the challenge is to cover the whole country. Yeah. As you can imagine, sites where people go to see birds because they're well-known spots will have lots and lots of observations and lists.
Yeah.
Other areas, very remote areas, and obviously areas that are not of such interest for birders. So as you can imagine, particularly some areas, sort of more remote farmland.
Yeah.
Which you can only reach by gravel roads. But the thing about the atlas is when you go and look, you can look at the it's a real-time update. So if I went in today...
Oh, online.
I could look at the effort map, and you just have a quick glance at the map. The areas, they use colours to show you which ones have had lots of observations.
Yeah.
And what you can do is you say, these two, three squares... not many observations for summer this year. I'll go and take half a day driving there. And typically what you do is say, and it takes you to some very interesting areas, driving in up through the hinterland, through the dirt roads, through farmlands and farm tracks. not great areas for seeing numbers of birds and species of birds, but this is all very important information to know just how these type of agricultural practices, how low the abundance and diversity of species are. That's the impact it's had compared to doing. And so you may go into a square which has farmland, and a little tract of native bush.
Yeah.
And so what the atlases would ask you to do is, if you're going through the farmland, is do count to the farmland, but stop when you get to the bush, and then do a count of the bush. Yeah. And so when you look at that area, you can see, you can see the difference in the species seen and the abundance of the species seen across those two environments.
Yeah.
And so typically when I've done bird atlasing, like go three or four of us and identify squares and drive on these dirt roads and gravel roads, you might sort of drive 5Ks, stop, do a 5-minute count, jump in the car, drive another 5Ks, stop, do a 5-minute count. And sort of through the day, maybe do about a dozen counts in that square.
Okay. But you're talking, I could understand you go to rural areas because they haven't been covered, but say if Palmerston North is one square and you get people who go to the Esplanade, or some, maybe the square in town, does it cover all of, are there people focusing on certain parts of the city rather than...
Well, I mean, you record your observation, it asks you to...
Yeah,
the GPS will throw you up names of locations that have been used for observations before.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're in a square and you open up the app...
The location is pinned down that close.
You open up the app, it'll say, start your checklist.
Mm.
It'll have picked up that you're in the square. The list that comes up, it'll give you the yellow birds anything else... So that'll be the list, but you enter something that hasn't been seen before, you'll get that red dot.
But you'd expect, say, Palmerston North as a whole to be covered rather than just a load of people. Oh, I wonder how many birds there are. I'll go to the Esplanade.
Palmerston North sits within a square, and with any square, there are a number of different environments.
Yeah, yeah.
And the hope is that most of those environments will be covered. I mean, you may not see a count for people walking around a race course, but you may see it pop at, say, Mangoni Walkway, which runs behind a race course.
Okay. Yeah.
And if you're at the square, I know that if you start a checklist, that when you go to submit it, it asks for the location, you'll see Palmerston North Square.
Okay. So, but if, say, you're walking down Rangitiki Street or you're out in Kelvin Grove or something...
Yeah, if you're out there and you pop up and it doesn't pop up a location, it will pop up a GPS coordinate.
Yeah.
And it will ask you to add a name to it. So I've done ones like that. That will be... I did one when we went out recently to Milrick's Line.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So... I did a count there when it popped up. It popped up and it gave the address.
Okay, yeah.
So the GPS location was spot on that address. So it picks up that data. So I just set a 346 Milrix line. But you may have got to these locations and it'll just be a GPS location and...
The middle of a field somewhere.
Name of the road.
Name
of the road that you're on.
Yeah.
It may give you the name, the address of the house that's nearest to that road.
Yeah.
It's up to you to say, well, actually, that house is it's a bit far away, so it's probably not. I'll just leave it at the name of this road with a GPS location. And you may add something that I've done once where I've been out in the gravel road. You come across a sort of a pond that's formed on a farm.
Yeah.
Especially after there's been a lot of rain. I'll park there and you stop there and you see birds have been attracted to that. So you enter that and it'll just give you a GPS location, the name of the road with the nearest property number. And then you can add to yourself ephemeral farm lake.
Yeah.
Just to explain that bit about
why it was there. Okay, so you'd say most of Palmerston North has been, mind you, I suppose it changes all the time anyway, so it needs to be regularly covered.
Yes, that's so that they like to get the data so it covers the seasons particularly.
As I say, to do
daytime, nighttime counts, they're obviously a lot lower. But I mean, I'll sit out. I've done nighttime counts just out my back garden. So any data is useful.
And is there's a community, is there? You do it on your own, or you know a lot of the other people? And
I know the people locally. We have a birding NZ. They have various area representatives, and they run meetings. We'll have we should have a quarterly meeting. It doesn't happen that often, but
and tests on bird identification. Do they put the silhouettes up?
No. They just get talks and interesting bits of bird conservation, and people have done interesting trips.
Okay.
But the bird atlas is part of that, and through that I've met people, and we go out.
Do they tend to be elderly or whole age?
No. We've had people who've moved on, but we had our group. I mean, there's three of us are retired, but we had a guy join us who's a South African who was doing his degree at Massey.
Oh, yeah.
Had a couple of people who worked for DOC.
So it's a fairly social activity, or are you more on your own doing this?
Usually more on your own doing it.
Yeah, yeah. But satisfying.
But it is. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's quite interesting. If you're doing some of these sort of farmland areas, that you get kind of excited seeing the blackbird because you've actually seen a bird.
Yeah.
Whereas as before, you'd be, so what?
Yeah.
So it is kind of interesting. Yeah.
This is part one of two. Listen next week for part two.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.